Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 156. My Three Shrinks. May 30th, 2008. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
One of the things that we really like to do is to present kind of this human face of psychiatry. I get a lot of kind of positive feedback, I guess, when I hear commenters mention that they, one of the things they like about our blog or our podcast is the fact that, you know, psychiatrists are actually real human beings and not these kind of blank slates that you can't really get a feel for.
That was the voice of Roy, one of the three psychiatrists who hosts the podcast My Three Shrinks and its associated blog, Shrink Wrap. And inasmuch as they keep their identities anonymous, they are simply Dinah, Roy, and Clink Shrink. Dinah's a psychiatrist in private practice. Roy's a psychiatrist who consults for general physicians in a hospital, and Clink Shrink is a prison and forensic psychiatrist. They bring their specialized perspectives together for a show that tends to be both informal and informative and often fun. Now, here's the interview. Dinah, Roy, and Clink Shrink, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We have very closely titled shows. In fact, your blog is named Shrink Wrap. I think sometimes people get us confused. I recently spoke to someone who told me that they had listened to my show, but it turned out they were thinking of your show.
Did they like it?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, they wanted to invite you to the thing that they were about to invite me to. So I'll tell you more about that later.
Then we get to go.
I'll tell you about that more later. I think we preach to pretty much the same choir, so I thought it would be good for us to get together.
Well, I'm really glad that you reached out to us and asked us to do this interview because it's something that I've thought of before, too.
Oh, good.
Given the fact that I've listened to your podcast, and we do have a very similar name. And in fact, we have this like elaborate sound equipment now, because before we just did it in a single microphone. And since there's three of us talking, we would sometimes have really poor sound qualities. And one of the iTunes reviews that we have says, I can't believe how awful your sound quality is, because your sister show, Shrink Wrap Radio, sounds great. So why can't you sound just like your other show?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, maybe we have to become a corporation or something and truly become sister shows. Well, I suffered with terrible sound for a long time, and my sound quality went up and down quite a bit. I'm finally feeling like I'm on top of it. But it really went through a lot of evolutions and different software, different hardware, different mics. And I finally came up with a solution that I seem to understand and be able to manage.
Can you, is this too geeky to ask what you're using?
It may be too geeky for our audience, but it's not too geeky for me. And there are probably some people out there that would be interested. I am Macintosh based, so I'm using a fairly new 24-inch iMac, and I got rid of my mixer.
I'm drooling as you're describing.
Ah, yeah, it's beautiful. And I got rid of my mixer. My mixer was actually a lot of the problem. And what allowed me to get rid of the mixer is a wonderful program called Wiretap Studio. And it's not very expensive. It's like $60 or $70. It's made by, I think, Rogue Amoeba Software. I hope I've got the right company. And you should look into it and check it out. And then for the microphone, I am using I'm going to block on it. Who makes it? It's an Electro Voice RE20, I believe.
Wiretap Studio. I'm writing some notes about that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful program because it allows you to record from Skype, and then I take it into GarageBand to add my intro and put on the music and do all of that. I do all of that in GarageBand, but Wiretap Studio enables the capture, and you can, right now it's being saved into AIFF Stereo, which will make it go easily into GarageBand, and it has some very nice editing tools of its own in Wiretap Studio.
On my Skype, I've got a little program called Call Recorder.
Yes, I've used that as well. I have that too.
Yes, I've used that for Skype, but we also have a mixer because most of our podcasts we do in person, the three of us, and it just never sounds good, all three of us sitting around one mic. So now we have three different mics. Well, they're all the same. They're Behringer C1s,
yes,
which are condenser mics, and then those are plugged into an Alesis Multimix 8.
That's what I had when I had a mixer, was I had that Alesis.
Did you ever figure out how to use it?
No, I was really having problems with it. I sort of, you know, off and on I'd figured it out, but then somehow I would slip.
Well, our listeners should probably know that we probably spent 15 minutes before we started recording this trying to figure out on our end how to get it so that we could hear us and hear you at the same time.
Actually, it was a half hour, but who's counting?
I was thinking probably. Yeah. 15 minutes in Roy time.
Okay.
That's right. My time is always half.
Let all just started.
So who's the nerd on your team? It sounds like somebody's got to have some computer skills there.
We have two of them. We have a senior and a junior nerd.
Okay.
Who's senior?
Oh, Roy is definitely the senior nerd.
Are you saying I'm older? Is that what you're telling me?
No. More experience.
Okay. Well, I don't know, because Clink is the one who actually makes money writing computer programs.
Oh.
Second career as a web application developer.
Oh, well, that's very, very nerdy.
Discussion by an ant on Clink's dining room table.
Oh, thank you for sharing the hygiene of the Clinkdom with an international audience.
Now, you three choose to be anonymous. You three choose to be anonymous, and I'm imagining you with paper bags over your heads, like the unknown comic. Why?
We actually are wearing paper bags right now.
Oh, good.
That was part of the problem.
Why the anonymity?
Let's see. Dinah might want to start with that.
Okay. So one day I decided I wanted a blog, and I'm not the computer geek in the group. So I asked either my husband, who's also not a computer geek, or Roy, how do I do this? And I didn't really know what a blog was. And I was sent to blogger.com, and I opened a blog and called it Shrinkwrap, and thought it would be good to have some geeks help me. So I asked my two close geek friends, who at the time I didn't realize they didn't know each other, and we spent a weekend putting up shrink wrap. At some point, Clink called me and said, "Who's this guy who speaks HTML?" And at some point, we all got together a few times in real life person, meaning on the patio or out to dinner. And at some point, Roy said, "We need a podcast." So I didn't know what a podcast it was or why we needed one. But I knew that Roy had been very nice about accommodating my blog needs, so we now have a podcast.
Now, even with
I didn't answer the question.
No, you didn't.
I totally lost.
Why the anonymity was the question.
You want to answer?
Yeah, why the anonymity?
So I started the blog, and actually I put my whole full real name on it. And then it hit me, wait, do I want all of my patients who go to Google and Google me by my name having access to coming right up with my blog? And at the same time, Clink and Roy both said they didn't want their names on this.
And
you'll have to answer why. But so after about a weekend, I took my last name off the blog. My first name really is Dinah. And the two of them, well, Roy for a year stayed in under deep cover. But then one day I was at a professional dinner sitting next to him, and he announced to the whole table, "I have a blog." And I thought, I guess it's not deep cover anymore. And Clink, she says she came out at a national conference, so I'll let her tell her story.
Okay.
Well, I just didn't want, because I've heard about medical bloggers getting into various sorts of trouble, blogging about whatever they talk about with their employers, mostly with employers, I think, is what I've heard about. And I didn't want to feel constrained with what I might want to have, what I want to talk about, and figured I would bypass that situation more so. I know it's not completely bypassable by just using a pen name, a web name. What do you call it? A
pseudonym.
Pseudonym. Thank you. And Clink.
I started out basically because I'm an introvert, so the idea of speaking or writing in any kind of a public forum, much less a global forum, was a little bit intimidating. So that and the fact that I'm a forensic psychiatrist and I work with various types of, maximum security prisoners and other type of criminals. And I once had a father in a custody case I was working on tell me, it's amazing what you can find out about people through computers. So all of these things kind of added together to the thought that I would prefer to have a screen name, although, as Dinah mentioned recently, we presented at a national conference on the use of the computers in psychiatry, and I think by the time you've talked about your blog at a national conference, you're pretty much out of cover at that point.
Today's New York Times Magazine has the cover article by a woman who blogs for something, first had her own blog and then was writing for something called Gawker, and she goes all through all the how this has sort of affected her life to the point where she wasn't going out in public and having panic attacks because her Gawker status had gotten her on Larry King Live, and I guess it depends on what you're blogging about.
I don't think the blog will ever give me panic attacks. I don't think it'll get that bad.
Nah.
Yeah.
We're all still going outside in public.
Yeah. So I understand the motivation. I am not in private practice anymore. And I think if I were, I might have some hesitation as well. Just to break the ice a little bit more, what would each of you be doing if you had not become psychiatrists?
I'd be a taxi cab driver in New York City. I would be in the back of her cab screaming.
Okay.
Roy is having a hard time.
I'm trying to think of
question.
A quick one, but I think I'm just going to try answering his question.
Yeah. Give me a straight answer.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on. So what would I be doing? Originally, I wanted to be a neuroscientist and study the inner workings of the brain at the cellular level. And I might be doing that if I didn't realize that I really like working with patients.
Okay, that's still sort of in the same ballpark. What if you were not in this medical/research ballpark?
Well, that's kind of like asking me what I'd be doing if I wasn't a man.
Okay. We could go there.
one leap at a time. If I wasn't doing anything medical, I'd probably be doing something with computers and what I have no idea.
Yeah.
That's probably what I'd be doing, too. I'd probably be a computer engineer or something like that, software designer.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And
what would you be doing if you weren't a psychologist?
Oh, boy. If I could reincarnate, I've got several things on my agenda for the next life, if that ends up being a possibility. In one lifetime, I would be some kind of a ski bum. In another lifetime, I would learn to be a surfer. And I would, maybe the first choice is I would really be a musician. I would learn piano and really get good on the piano. But none of those things seem to be happening in this lifetime, other than being a casual skier.
Well, I'll tell you that the reason I gave you such a quick response as a New York City taxi cab driver was because when I applied for residencies and you had to write a essay on why you wanted to do a residency in psychiatry or some type of personal statement, I wrote mine on sort of comparing psychiatry to being a taxi cab driver in New York City, and it started, I think, if I wasn't going to be a psychiatrist, and talked about listening to people's problems. And so that was how come you got such a quick.
Ah, yeah. Well, now it makes sense,
and
too.
I still got a residency, actually, except that I have to say the one I ended up at was the only one where I wasn't asked about this strange essay.
Yeah.
And the strange essay came about because I wrote a very conventional essay, and my advisor looked at it and said, that looks like everybody else's essay.
Well, one of the neat things about your podcast is the humor that seems to bubble up between the three of you in the mix. And I think psychiatry generally has an aura of reserve and formality, yet you guys don't fit that stereotype at all. Is the desire to transcend that stereotype part of what drives you in your podcasting and blogging?
Oh, absolutely, I think. I would be much less interested in doing something that was kind of a dry review about the latest American Journal of Psychiatry articles or something like that.
So face it, he likes my jokes. I never knew that before. Well, somebody has to.
One of the things that we really like to do is to present kind of this human face of psychiatry. I get a lot of positive feedback, I guess, when I hear commenters mention that they, one of the things they like about our blog or our podcast is the fact that, you know, psychiatrists are actually real human beings and not these kind of blank slates that you can't really get a feel for.
Yeah, I agree. I think your show really succeeds on that score.
And I just wanted to apologize kind of ahead of time to the listeners. We hear Dave on our end fairly well, but it's a little low. So if it sometimes it seems like we're talking over him, it's just that we don't hear him.
Or that we're talking over him.
It's always an issue on Skype anyway, I find, and it's hard to be totally graceful as an interviewer because I generally often have to kind of break in and talk over in order to get a word in edgewise.
That's how you know you're alive.
Yeah. Now, when you guys started out, I think you had thought that your audience would be psychiatrists, but that's kind of evolved and changed over time, hasn't it?
We don't know, because we know we have a lot. We have regular commenters.
Once we took a survey of our shrink wrap readers, and there were about 200 people who answered the survey.
But that's about 10% of our visitors per week.
But still, from that, 13% were psychiatrists. Another 7% were other types of physicians.
Mm-hmm.
And in total, it was around 45 or 50% of the listeners were some sort of healthcare folks.
Okay, interesting. And I noticed in the past year or so, it seems like you might be moving toward doing interviews. Is that a direction that you see increasing?
We're always happy to have somebody on as a guest. To talk about whatever it is that really makes them enthusiastic and that they feel passionate about. So it's nice to be able to do that. I wouldn't see it as kind of a format that we would solely do, but we're always eager to do that. And I'm hoping that we can get you on through the phone, at least on one of our podcasts sometime.
Well, I would love to do that.
It's a matter of sometimes somebody asks us questions that, you know, we can't answer this, but it would be nice to have somebody who could answer it. So we've asked people specifically to come on to address issues. The other problem we've had, though, is that a lot of times we do this on a few hours' notice, and coordinating anybody else to, you know, can you come at a certain time is hard.
Sure.
So when we've had guests, typically we've had to do something called advanced planning.
Yeah, and you're all three, you know, busy professionals, so I could see where that would be an issue. And also, you don't have as pressing a need for guests as I do, because you have the three of you, and there's a natural chemistry, and that probably generates its own content.
I think that's one of the things that's made it easier for us to continue, because as medical blogs or podcasts go, we're probably in the longer lived realm now. The blog has been going on for over 2 years, and the podcast has been a year and a half now. And when you're doing it by yourself, it's easy to kind of lose interest in it, but also that need to, I have to post something. But to have three of us doing it in our own independent schedules makes it a lot easier to continue, even when you're at a point where, you know, you don't really have time to do much with it for a month or so. I really admire how long you've been doing your shrink wrap radio and sticking with it. It's fantastic.
Thank you. It's the listener feedback that keeps me going, quite frankly. You know, when I started, I didn't know if anybody would be interested in listening or not, or whether if there were professionals out there and they listened, they might find me not measuring up to their standards or something. So I had all sorts of scary scenarios in my head about it, but it turned out that the ideal audience that I imagined for myself has materialized, and it's been so supportive that that's really what keeps me going. I wanted to engage you a little bit in the history of the relationship between our two professions, psychiatry and psychology. There have been various ups and downs. What's your experience of that relationship at present?
Clank is like making these dying faces.
Oh my gosh,
what a question.
No, it's about trying to plug in this MacBook without losing the earphones.
Yeah, well, I think in my experience working in corrections, there's just a huge discrepancy between what psychiatry and psychology does, I mean, compared to any other area or institution that I've worked in, because my practice in the correctional setting is very much a high-volume medication management diagnosis-driven kind of a practice, and it's just not something that the average training in psychology would prepare somebody to do.
Right.
And so the psychologists there are mostly oriented towards, you know, crisis intervention, supportive therapeutic services, things like that. So it's probably the area where I've seen the biggest distinction between the two professions and what they do.
I'm interested in the fact that you work in a prison environment. I just recently submitted a proposal to the warden of San Quentin to do a podcast interviewing prisoners there, and I have no idea if it'll be accepted or not. The woman who was my dean just before I retired has been running a program there, and I approached her, and she's enthusiastic about doing it, so we'll see if it happens. I've been very apprehensive about going into that prison. It kind of scares me. What's your experience of being in prison like?
It's interesting because just recently, last week, I had to go between buildings in one of our facilities. And to get to the building I needed to get to, I had to cross through the recreation yard of what used to be a maximum security prison during rec time.
Oh, boy.
Right, so you've got all kinds of inmates out there, and you've got the BGF gang over here, and the Muslims over there, and, you know, all the groups, various...
BGF.
Black Guerrilla Family. It's a gang.
Thank you.
So you've got the various prison gangs staking out their various parts of the yard. As I'm cutting through the yard, escorted by, you know, one correctional officer who's shorter and more dainty than I am.
Oh, boy.
And
a woman,
yeah. We just happened to be walking together. She wasn't assigned to escort me. So we're walking across the yard, and this prisoner comes running up to me, and I'm hearing all over the yard, hey, Doc, how you doing? And the inmate came running up to me to say, Doc, I hear you're leaving the facility. And I said, yes. And he said, you can't do that. You've been my doc since 2003. So I think... the thing that makes me somewhat more comfortable being there is knowing that the longer you're there, the more people get to know you. You build up a certain reputation for credibility, and that by itself has a certain protective effect.
Yeah. Well, that's great. It reminds me of an experience that I had when I was when I first came to Sonoma State University, and I was still pretty young, and I had a chance to teach a class in psychology for police officers. And at the time, I think I had some residual hippiness, quite a bit actually, left, so I had fairly long hair and a beard. And
well, I thought you meant heavy set.
No, no. And so when I walked into that first class, I one of the cops kind of muttered something like, that must be the teacher. And now I'm not a big guy. I'm of slender build and not particularly imposing looking, but I felt like I had to sort of nip that in the bud. And I don't know where this came from, but I said, "Who said that? You got something to say? Say it to me directly." And you know what? It was smooth sailing from there on in. Now, I don't know that I would try that in a prison. It might not be a good idea.
Yeah. And it also helps being female in a prison. You get a different reaction from officers and inmates than I would being a female working in a female facility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it also helps to have gray hair. I call it the granny transference. It allows for some instant bonding with some of my patients who are raised by their grandmothers.
Okay, so the bag came partially off the head, and now we can see little wisps of gray hair coming out from beneath the edges of the bag.
I want to point out that she had gray hair when I met her 20 years ago.
Let me hear from the other two of you something about that question that I asked about the current state of affairs between psychology and psychiatry, however you want to speak to it. If maybe you're working in an environment where there are cross-disciplinary teams or you have other sorts of observations,
you know,
and you don't have to be politic.
No, we're rarely politic.
Psychology is sort of a lost art, I think. You know, I don't know very many psychologists because I work in solo private practice, so I don't see many other people. But I also work in community psychiatry settings, and there tend to be a split. There's psychiatrists and there are social workers, but very few psychologists. I actually can think of maybe two over the years.
Hmm.
And so psychology sort of has gotten lost with the fact that psychiatrists prescribe medications and many of the patients end up on medications. And social workers do psychotherapy, which was actually something that I was not aware of until probably I finished residency. I had gone to medical school in New York, where the social worker was somebody on the inpatient ward who negotiated family sessions and follow-up. I wanted to be a psychologist originally. I went into college with the thought that I was, and I went to a college that had a very strong experimental psychology program, but no clinical psychology mm-hmm. program, and I didn't quite understand that as a psychologist, it would have been possible to both see patients and do research. I thought you had to pick either or.
Yeah,
that's
interesting.
That was when I decided to become a psychiatrist, because then I thought, well, then I could do research and see patients.
I had thought about psychiatry at one point because I had never heard of clinical psychology, and I was in college, an undergraduate, and I got together with a buddy during the summer when I was home from college, and we were sort of saying, what are you going to be? What are you going to be? And he told me that he was going to be a clinical psychologist. Now, I had had only one course. I had had Introduction to Psychology at that time, and it was talking all about rats and running rats through mazes and stuff like that, and I thought it was pretty disappointing. And wasn't very interested in it. And he said he was going to be a clinical psychologist. And I said, what's that? And he said, oh, it's just like a psychiatrist, only you don't have to go to medical school. So that's what first...
He could have been a social worker, too, because that's sort of, you know, you do psychotherapy and you don't even have to get that PhD in psychology.
And I didn't know that at the time. And that's perfectly true. And also now, of course, there are all sorts of master's options. You don't even have to be a social worker. You could get a master's in marriage family therapy counseling. And there is a new profession emerging called, I don't know if you have it where you are, but in California, they're pressing for something called LPC.
We do have that here. We have LCPC.
Okay. What does that stand for?
The Licensed Clinical Professional Counselor.
Okay. So there's this interesting migration of professions, and I think sort of, although social work has a very old history, maybe almost as old as psychiatry. And actually, psychology goes back. It's probably as old as psychiatry. But psychology was sort of, I guess, encroaching on, in some ways, on territory that was deemed to be the territory of psychiatry in terms of psychologists wanting to do psychotherapy. And now that's kind of accepted, I think.
Yeah.
And psychiatrists, I have the impression that psychiatrists have migrated and maybe been pushed in some ways more and more towards the pharmacological interventions, which make, are any of you doing talk therapy or is it all pharmacological?
Well, I have a psychotherapy practice, so I see people for psychotherapy, and I think the people who tend to call a psychiatrist for psychotherapy often tend to need medication, so... But it's one-stop shopping.
Yeah,
I don't think it's ever really possible to completely divide the two, and I may get some disagreement with my peers here, but even in my pure medication management practice, you just can't divide, talk about medications with what's going on with the rest of the person.
Okay.
And especially when you see someone for medication follow-up and they've just had something upsetting happen to them, you can't say, oh, hold that thought, I'm going to move you to the psychologist in the office next door. You take the person as you find them, and so there's really not a clean divide between the two sometimes.
I have to agree with that. I don't think that you can... it's possible to prescribe medications without doing any sort of therapy, but to do so, I think, would be really poor quality as far as making decisions about why someone might need a medication. This idea of med checks, for example, I think is... It's just very poor to have a session where you're just focused on the medications without really knowing what else is going on in the person's life. When I was a fourth year resident, I was moonlighting and I had a position at a community mental health center, and I was working there for probably 4 or 5 months, something like that. And the administrator wrote me a note once that said, it was a rather detailed note saying, you know, we understand that you've been spending a lot of time talking to the patients. You're supposed to just be doing an evaluation and writing for medications. Please don't spend any time talking to the patients. And I quit. They put that in writing. I probably still have it somewhere. I presented it to my program and quit the job in protest, really, and I think we stopped sending docs over there because that was, and it wasn't like I was spending an hour and a half doing a med check or something like that. It was just this idea that you shouldn't be trying to figure out what else is going on with the patient. Just manage the meds and that's it.
Well, good for you.
Into their territory, or?
It must have been a piece of that, possibly, but that just shows, I think, a really poor understanding of what psychiatry is about.
Well, what about the pressure from managed care? I mean, might there be pressure there to not spend too much time with folks, to dispense the medications and move on?
Well, I mean, I'm a hospital-based consultation liaison psychiatrist, so I deal with managed care, but not at the level where they tell me what to do or how much I can see people. I guess that's more of an outpatient issue where you have to get authorizations for particular CPT codes, let's say. Dinah, I know you don't probably do much with managed care, but do you have to complete outpatient, what do they call, treatment plans, where you have to request a certain number of visits?
I do. I do, so that the patient can request reimbursement, and I don't recall this ever being an issue. I fill out the forms generally for something called a 90807, which is a 50-minute psychotherapy session with medication management and on an outpatient basis in the physician's office.
Did you say 50 or 15?
50.
Okay.
Zero. In a private practice realm, I never see anyone for under what's a 90805. 25-minute session, and actually I can count on one hand how many patients I see for half-hour sessions. Generally, I see people for 50-minute sessions. I've never had an insurance... the issue doesn't get to be like, no, you can't do that. The issue is how much they're going to reimburse the patient for the visit. And people don't
or if they reimburse at all.
I haven't had too many people say they don't get reimbursed, but people don't typically come and say, look, this is what you charge and this is how much I'm getting reimbursed. I don't usually know.
So the insurance company doesn't tell you, well, we think you should
get
90805 instead of an 07.
They don't think. They send a form back that says approved for 90807, 12 visits or 15 visits in this period of time. And if I've used more than that number of sessions, I have to resubmit a form.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think. It's a computer-generated form. Nobody ever says, why are you doing that, or how many, or even at this point, I think it's loosened up some because of outside pressure. The only time was 15 years ago, I was seeing somebody for twice-a-week therapy, and I think that an insurance company did ask why. And I think I responded, and I think it was approved.
I think the things have kind of gone by the way.
Yeah, there's not.
They realized it was so cost ineffective to spend all that time kind of overseeing what we're doing that they've kind of cut back on it.
Well, I think that's part of the advantage, though, of I think by virtue of being psychiatrists, you're at the top of the pecking order pyramid, and I think that you get hassled less as a result of that than probably psychologists and social workers do.
So do you get hassled?
I'm not in private practice now, but I know that people who I do know that are in private practice have to go to, you know, they complain a lot about managed care and about getting the number of visits that they need in order to feel effective and getting the kind of therapeutic interventions that they want to do, getting those approved. And a lot of professionals engage, I think, in some obfuscation in order to get reimbursed.
That's a very politic way to put it.
What does that mean? I don't want to ask that.
Well, what it means is that they will give a diagnosis that's reimbursable.
Mm-hmm. Or exaggerate something.
They've got somebody who's coming to them, but the insurance company only wants to reimburse for a very narrow set of diagnostic categories. And so, but this person...
Well, that happens. I get forms bounced back sometimes saying that, you know, my favorite one is, you know, obsessive compulsive disorder has a 4-digit code. And
right.
It'll get bounced back with, you know, it needs a 5-digit code. And I think that's only happens
that's
once.
The computer.
But I think what I did was there's some version, and I'm not very good at the codes. I tend to use just a handful of them. But I think I coded something as some form of an adjustment disorder. And there's one form of adjustment disorder that has a 4-digit code and not a 5-digit code. And so I think I threw a 0 at the end. And I may have been bounced back for 295.7 bipolar disorder, not otherwise specified. So I threw a 0 at the end.
Schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder.
I have no idea what these people are talking about. I haven't had to talk to an insurance company since 1991.
Well, lucky you.
It just goes on people's statements that have as a diagnostic code so they can mail it in.
I occasionally
talk to an insurance company.
I don't know if this next question makes sense or not, but do all three of you share the same theoretical perspective?
On what?
That's the part that I wasn't sure if it made sense or not. I guess it would kind of assume if you were all involved in talk therapy or whether you would have a, you know, come from the same theoretical perspective there, or even in terms of are there not different schools of psychiatry and practice?
Now Roy's the one making these funny faces.
Yeah, I'm listening to this going, what language is
you know, no, I get it, though. I could answer
I
this.
Know.
I could answer this.
Two of the three of us went to the same training program, so we sort of have similar ways of...
But the third one of us went to a training program that's very similar to the one we went to.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at me funny.
So what are you trying to...
I'll give you my perspective on this, because I was a medical student at Cornell in New York City, which had associated with it the Payne Whitney Psychiatric Clinic, which is a very, very... psychoanalytically oriented program.
Okay.
And so on psychotic inpatients, people would talk about some of the psychodynamics as well as the medications. And to add to that, since I was at the Payne Whitney Clinic and one of my advisors was one of the heads, and I wanted to spend a summer in Philadelphia, he arranged for me to do a summer at the Institute of Pennsylvania Hospital, which is also a very psychoanalytic place that no longer exists. So as a medical student, I came at psychiatry from a very psychoanalytic background. And I'll add as an aside that in college I had spent a summer at Western Psychiatric Institute and Clinic in a special undergraduate program run by David Kupfer, who's a mood disorders expert, mm-hmm. and that's a very biologically based program. So even before I hit med school, or as I hit med school, I was hit with this dividing line in psychiatry, which was very strongly felt in New York, that there were biological programs and there were psychodynamic programs.
Exactly. That speaks to my question, yes.
Right, and in New York, you know, the psychoanalysts would sort of follow each other. You know, at some point there were all at Columbia, then Columbia became a very biologically oriented program, and they all moved to Payne Whitney. In Baltimore, there's the Hopkins the psychiatry program there is very biological, and Shepard Pratt is noted for being a sort of long-term psychodynamic institution. I think with time, this is fading a lot. It's very hard to deny the biology of psychiatric disorders. It's very hard to deny the efficacy of some of the medications that are out there.
Or the fact that when you take pictures of their brains, there are some very obvious abnormalities.
Right. And then there are things like, you know, there was a big lawsuit against Chestnut Lodge, which is a psychoanalytic type place by, I think, a physician who was treated with long-term psychodynamic therapy for his major depression and eventually got better
medication.
Yeah, or ECT or something.
Yeah, leaving the facility.
Right. So you end up with sort of standards of care, and I think the answer is that while on any individual point the three of us like to bicker a little, we're coming at psychiatry from a standpoint of you meet the patient, you do an extended evaluation by asking them a lot of questions. None of us, I think, goes into a room with a patient and has the patient sit down and sits there silently waiting for them to spill forth in their own. We all do a fairly structured interview, I think, asking, you know, why are you here? What's your past psychiatric history? Not in those terms, but going through it. What's your family history? What was your family like? What are your medical problems? Come to a diagnostic conclusion that may or may not change with time, and then plot a course of treatment.
Okay, great. Now, on a more personal note, what do each of you do for your own mental health? You know, it can be stress.
Blog.
I'm sorry.
I just stay away from my teenagers.
And I do the opposite. I try to stay with my teenager as much as I can.
And I have no teenagers, so I stay with my running shoes quite a bit. I'm on my 25th year of running.
Wow.
I find the blog very therapeutic. If something's sort of on my mind, I'll, you know, if it's not terribly personal, I'll, something sort of hit me during the day. It's, you know, writing is what I do.
Okay. What do you guys do to promote your podcast? Do you have any good secrets or tips?
Nothing.
Oh, let's see. So we have the blog, and on the sidebar there is a link to the podcast. You know, other than, you know, that kind of cross promotion across the blog and the podcast and mentioning it here and there, that's about it.
Okay. And you came up with the name Shrink Wrap independently, right?
Well, it just sort of hit me as I was sitting down, and it said, "What's the name of your?" I mean, I don't think I thought this out. I was just sitting at Blogger, and it asked for the name of the blog.
Yeah,
I just thought, well, Shrink Wrap sounds good.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me. You know, I thought it was a brilliant idea, and
I agree.
And I've since discovered that there's a comedy group out there called Shrink Wrap, and there are other.
In the UK is also a very popular thing too, called Shrink Wrap.
Yeah, I found several other Shrink Wraps out there.
There's a lot of, I noticed also a number of newspaper columns that are called shrink wrap.
Oh,
and, you
boy.
Know, if you spell it with a W, it's W-R-A-P. There's a lot of plastic things that cover food, too.
Oh, of course. That's what makes it funny. Where do you see the show going in the future?
Well, it'd be nice if we could get on a regular schedule, I must say. So
you were on one.
We have been on a weekly schedule. And essentially what we would do is we would generally meet on a Sunday, and we would record two podcasts. And then, so one would come out the following weekend and the other another weekend. And so we'd meet every other week. We were doing that kind of on a schedule for a while, and then...
Real life gets in the way.
Real life got in the way for some of us. And
vacations. And
right. So we've kind of fallen out of that schedule. Like, for example, I've got two podcasts in the can now that I've been trying to get out. One I hope to get out today, and then we have another one to get out. So, but it's been 5 weeks since our last podcast was put out there. But
I noticed that.
What's that?
I noticed that. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a bit of a dry spell for us. Usually we're 2-3 weeks. We'll usually do 1-3 per month.
We also have, actually, Scientific American Mind is doing a review of us. So hopefully we'll get a little more steam done around the time that comes out.
Oh, that's cool. I got a little mention. I got a paragraph unexpectedly. One of my listeners called my attention to it, and I was thrilled. Are they actually interviewing you or something like that?
They did interview. Let's see, they interviewed me about something, but it was separate from the actual podcast.
Yeah, we don't know what they're doing. It may just be a little blurb.
They did do some email questions, too, because I remember answering some email questions. Mm.
Well, that's great. It's a nice publication. I really like it.
Yeah.
Well, we're sort of at the point where we need to wrap things up. Any last word that you'd like to get in before we do?
So our 50 minutes is up, is it?
Yes. Just about.
If you've listened to either of, because you do yours as a podcast. Is it also a radio show?
No, it's not. It's not, no.
Shrink Wrap Radio, but it's not really on a radio.
That's right.
Okay. But I would say to any of the listeners out there who haven't done this, go to iTunes and write a review on both of our podcasts, please.
You stole my line.
I know. I did it. Sorry. That's usually what Clink says on our podcast, to remind people to do that.
Yes, that's great. I thrive on those reviews as well. So, Dinah, Roy, and Clink Shrink, thanks so much for being my guests today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Dave, thank you very much for having us.
It's been fun. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with my three shrinks, Roy, Dinah, and Clink Shrink. I made two gaffes when describing my podcasting setup. First of all, my apologies to Ambrosia Software for incorrectly attributing their wonderful program, Wiretap Studio, to Rogue Amoeba. They're both great software companies, and for some reason, I frequently get them mixed up. But Ambrosia Software gets the kudos for Wiretap Studio. Also, in describing my setup, I left out the most recent addition to my gear, which provides the, quote, secret sauce. I'm referring to the Aphex 230 voice processor. So I hope at some point Roy or the other three shrinks listen back to this and get this additional information. Maybe I'll send them an email to this effect. In the discussion, I touched briefly on some of the historical rivalry between psychiatry and psychology. And in fact, as you know, there are two professional associations, both with the abbreviation APA. There's the American Psychiatric Association and the American Psychological Association. And there has been some movement within the psychological APA for psychologists to gain prescription privileges, which would further blur the lines between psychiatry and psychology. And I didn't bring that up in our discussion here because I didn't want to bog the interview down with these disciplinary rivalries, etc. But I thought that some of my listeners might be interested in that, particularly those of you who are students and graduate students of psychology and who are thinking about going into practice down the line sometime. There are, I did a little bit of research on this. It looks to me like there are at least two states in the U.S. now, New Mexico and Louisiana, where psychologists with additional postdoctoral training can get prescription privileges, limited, not for treating all medical disorders, clearly, but specifically for prescribing tranquilizers and other kinds of psychoactive drugs. And psychology for some time has been pushing for these prescription privileges. I'm sure the motivation is partly monetary, but also there is the feeling that there are not enough practitioners out there who have prescription privileges and that the public would be better served. And in fact, evidently, there was a demonstration project that was funded by the Department of Defense, and they came out in favor and supporting this. You might recall my interview with Philip Zimbardo of Stanford, very influential psychologist. When he was president of the American Psychological Association, I saw a letter that he wrote to, I forget who he wrote it to Congress, I think, very much supporting, yeah, he wrote it to a congressperson in support of the idea of psychologists being able to have prescription privileges. It's a controversial issue, not just between psychology and psychiatry, but also within psychology, because some clinical psychologists feel that this would be a bad direction for psychology to move in, that there are many clinical psychologists who don't embrace the, quotes, medical model and feel that this would move us more towards the medical model and away from a more educational model. If you're interested in learning more about this issue, it turns out that there is a whole division of the American Psychological Association that I think is devoted to more or less to this issue. It's Division 55. And students might want to go to their website at www.division55.org/legislative.htm. That's division55, the Arabic numerals, .org/legislative.htm.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. And Dr. Dave is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Exploring our spirit and our psyche, we are learning to unwind. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. We're all in your mind. We're all in your mind.
Well, it's hard to believe that another whole week has gone by. Time passes so quickly. You'll recall that Top Spots lets me offer you advertising space in exchange for a $20 PayPal donation to Shrink Wrap Radio. It's a great way for you to support the show. If you have a blog or a website that you'd like to advertise on our homepage, there are 10 Top Spots waiting for you. Actually, there are 8 Top Spots waiting for you right now, because the top two have been taken. The top spot now is occupied by Talent Development, who have a website promoting the psychology of creativity and personal development. And the number two slot is taken by Get the Dream Videos. And so you can add your blog or website in one of those spots. As a matter of fact, the next person who makes a $20 donation will get in the very top spot. Just go to Shrink Wrap Radio, and on the right-hand side of the page near the top, you'll see the top spots box. Just click on the top most available spot. It'll then ask you to enter the URL of the blog or website you wish to promote and a brief message that you'd like to appear when people mouse over your link. It'll then take you to PayPal so that you can pay your $20. And this is a great deal for you, particularly if you live in outside the U.S., because $20 is nothing for you, against the euro at least. You'll get lots of great advertising with your blog or website in front of everyone who visits our site. And as each new advertiser signs up, you'll get bumped down the list, but at the rate it's going, you may be up there for a month or more. And, you know, nothing lasts forever, so eventually you'll get bumped off the list, but you'll get quite a bit of exposure. And if you don't have a blog or a website, well, you could use our code of Shrink3 at GoDaddy and get one. Or maybe you just like to support the show, but you don't have your own blog or website. Well, you could just make the donation and use the opportunity to promote somebody else's blog or website that's one of your favorites. Our transcript effort is continuing to move along very nicely. Can you believe it? We now have 30 shows that have been transcribed or that are in process. Be sure to take a look at the transcripts link on the site to see what's there. Also, I'd love to hear from you to hear if you're finding these transcripts at all useful. So if you've downloaded a transcript, if you've used it for a class or some other purpose, let us know. This will add further fuel to the enthusiasm of our volunteers who are doing the transcription. So take a look at the transcripts link on the site to see what's there and what's in progress, and let me know a show or two that maybe you'd like to transcribe. You can use the transcripts that are currently there as models for how to format. Do it in Microsoft Word, and then I'll convert it into an Adobe Acrobat file, and I'll upload it to the site. Also, if you look at the comments area of the transcript page, you'll see that I've posted some additional transcription tips. Be sure to look at those. Once again, you can follow my very occasional Twitters at Twitter/ShrinkWrapRadio. At this point, I think I have all of 3 followers, so far I haven't been motivated to Twitter a whole lot. But as more people come on board, maybe my production rate will go up. Don't forget, the sponsors for this show are Mevio and GoDaddy. And GoDaddy is still running that 25% discount for a limited time. So go to the GoDaddy link that you'll see in the right-hand gutter, and you'll find links to these discounts. For example, up until June 15, you can get a 25% discount off of any order of $100 or more just by using the code SHRINK25 at checkout from the GoDaddy site. And there are also discounts that are associated with Shrink 1, Shrink 2, and Shrink 3. So take a look at our site to find out what those are. There's even a promotion there that you'll find where you can get discounts, including 35 free tunes from eMusic.
This is Josh C. from San Jose. You're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
I'm afraid, once again, we're running a bit long here, so just a few quick listener emails. Thanks to Kim, who wrote after filling out our listener survey, saying, "Thank you, Dr. Dave, but I would have filled it out regardless of whether you were going to give me a gift. I so appreciate the work you are doing that I would be more than pleased to do whatever I can to support the show. I might even try tackling some transcripts." Well, Kim, I hope you do. I'd love to hear from you again in that regard. And then we hear from Axel in Germany, who I've made reference to before. He wrote, "Dear Dr. Dave, this is Axel from Germany. I haven't written for quite a while, and I think it's about time again. Well, at my home, you're only called Dr. Shrink because I talk about your interviews that much, so much that even my kids, Felix 9 and Ella 7, know you. The thoughts that come up in me really develop my view of the world, and as we know, the only thing that exists is what we perceive." Yes, indeed, it's all in your mind. "My wife rolls her eyes when I tell her, 'Hey, I've got an interesting new thought from Shrink Wrap Radio.' But in the end, we end up discussing the thoughts, and she appreciates it nearly as much as I do. Now to the shows I want to write you about. You interviewed Dr. Taylor about her stroke of insight and her presentation on TED.com. It was fascinating for me to listen to her clear observations in such a difficult situation. Congratulations on that one. Yeah, and let me add parenthetically that she has just been getting a lot of media play. She's since been on Oprah, and her book is now coming out, and it's been picked up by a major publisher. Back to Axel's letter. He says, then there was your interview with Sarah Hannah Radcliffe. For me, it's quite interesting what she says about her therapy, because what she describes is what I learned to be a typical Gestalt method. So is it just labeling, or did Gestalt develop in different directions in different countries? Does she have a Gestalt background? And I think I forwarded that to Sarah Hannah Radcliffe, and I think she responded directly to Axel, if I recall correctly. He goes on to say, you did a show where you talked with students about the individual and the new media. Yes, it was called The Individual and the Collective. He says, what I liked about that were the different thoughts and views. I could have listened to that one for another few hours, so maybe you'll do a similar show again. Well, that's really good feedback for me, because I always feel a little hesitant about these shows where I go off into the world and I interview people, and then I wonder if it's going to be at all interesting to my listeners. So I really appreciate the support that I get, that I've gotten each time I've done that, actually. And then back to Axel's letter, and he says, and here's another thought. I'm an English teacher, and I will ask my students if they would like to do a transcription as a voluntary work to get a better mark. Maybe that will help. If they agree, they'll write an email to you to find out which show they could do. So that's it for now. I wish you all the best, and keep up the good work, Axel. And of course, Axel, I've heard from about 6 or 7 of your students. I've indicated that they're working on shows on the site. I haven't received any transcripts yet. I think it's a very ambitious project, because I've heard from native English speaker volunteers who are doing the transcription, and they run into places where they've got questions and have trouble understanding. So we'll just have to see how it works out. Listener Rick wrote about number 85, the heroine's journey with Dr. Eileen Murdoch, saying, this is another one of those shows where I had the opportunity to listen to a point of view that I would never have otherwise bothered to expose myself to. This is one of the many things I love about shrink wrap. I like to hear about things that I'm not typically interested in, but would like to know something about, yet don't have the patience or time to gobble down in book form. What a cool show. I have decided to add one of Dr. Murdoch's expressions, depression is a sacred journey. I like that better than most of the other things I hear today when it comes to depression. I'm so grateful for all the neat things I've learned by listening to Shrink Wrap. Thanks, Dr. Dave. And then finally, hi, Dr. Dave. I think it's great what you do, and I enjoy listening to your interviews. I wanted to let you know I'd consider transcribing a show to return the favor. Wonderful. I'm finishing up my master's in marriage family therapy, and I'm starting Gestalt training at the end of this year. That being said, I'd most enjoy doing either the Gestalt interview, number 21, or the one with Irvin Yalom, although I'm searching for the number. He says, I can't find where it is. Maybe it was Wise Counsel. Yeah, it is on Wise Counsel, and I think those are already transcribed. So check to see if the Gestalt interview number 21 has been transcribed yet, and if it hasn't, jump on it. He asks, anyway, do you have a preference of which one? I can't do it in the very immediate future because at the moment I'm swamped, but in the not-too-distant future, cheers, Kip. Well, Kip, I hope you don't forget this commitment, and when you do have the time, look on our transcripts page, and you can see which things have either already been transcribed or are in process. And then drop me an email. Let me know which one you'd like to do. Or if you're looking for a suggestion from me, I'll be happy to give you one at that point. So I think that better wrap it up for today. You can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. In addition to emails, you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype. Our name there is ShrinkPod. You're encouraged to leave voice messages using the MyChingo link on our website. And we have a phone where you can leave messages, 206-337-0622. It's been a long time since I've received one of those cool You're on the Couch with Dr. Dave kind of transitions. Send me some voice transitions that I can use. Thanks again to Roy, Dinah, and Clink Shrink for telling us about their work in psychiatry and podcasting. And on my next show, I'll be exploring the psychological ramifications of the virtual world, Second Life, with author Wagner James Au. Until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.